This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with Lori Gilbertson, former prosecutor, and with Tribeca Blue Consulting. We're going to talk about the Menendez brothers a little bit today, and I want to get your insight from a prosecutor's standpoint. There's obviously been some new evidence that's come to light. Members of the band Menudo. I feel silly even saying this because it's like Menudo and Menendez brothers. Who would have thought that this would be a connection that would ever be made? But it certainly has, with the father being the head of RCA Records at the time and very much involved with the band Menudo, those members coming out and saying that he allegedly molested them in very similar ways as to the allegations of Jose Menendez molesting his own sons. An argument that was made that he, of course, did molest his sons back in those days and was one of the factors in them murdering their parents. However, we had not heard any of the allegations from outside sources other than the Menendez brothers at that point in time. With this being a new piece to this story, do you think this will lead us in the direction of a new trial, of exoneration, of hearings? What, if anything, could these new revelations bring about in the case of the Menendez brothers, Lori?
You know, upon reading it, my answer would be no, was my first reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, the two items of evidence that were at issue here are a letter from Eric Menendez to his cousin, Andy, talking about, you know, sex abuse that he was suffering at the hands of his father. So there's that's the first one.
Yeah.
And then the second one, like you mentioned, and we'll go once again to what we talk about a lot, Tony, in the you can't make this stuff up
yeah.
part of your show here.
Yeah.
The series involving the members of Menudo, where one of them is saying that, you know, when he was 14 back in 1983, that he was abused mm-hmm. By Jose Menendez. So, you know, these could have both been, you know, possibly compelling pieces of evidence at the trial. Yet, you know, it does not, to me, seem to rise to the really, you know, high standard that you have to meet in California to overturn a conviction or to even get an evidentiary hearing. And, you know, it's really saying that there must have been, you know, that this newly discovered evidence really proves the defendant's actual innocence. And here you're talking about the brothers who gunned down their parents mm-hmm. in a really, you know, horrific, incredibly violent way. And one of, I believe Mark Yargos in his letter or his motion asking to vacate the conviction says that the only issue is whether the brothers were actually being abused. And looking at that, it does not seem to me that is the only issue. Even if the jury found that the brothers may have been abused in some way, that doesn't necessarily mean that they would have accepted a self-defense claim with all of the evidence presented. Mm-hmm. So that's not really the only issue. And even if that were the only issue, these two pieces of evidence don't seem to me to completely solve that issue for a jury. They would be something for a jury to consider. So it doesn't seem to me like they're going to get, certainly I don't think they will get a vacating of the conviction, and maybe they'll get a hearing on it. Maybe they'll get an evidentiary hearing to determine what value and weight this might have had in front of a jury. Mm-hmm. That might happen. But as to vacating the conviction, I don't see that happening at all.
Yeah, the likelihood of vacating the conviction, probably not. But if they did get an evidentiary hearing, it would be a step forward that they've not had while they've been incarcerated. If they were to get mm-hmm. that hearing, what could the possible outcomes or paths be after that, should that hearing take place?
Well, I think that if they were to get a hearing, you know, the court would certainly be going through the evidence to determine whether the evidence could have even been presented at trial. And whether the evidence has a probative value. Mm-hmm. So that goes also to the, you know, to the validity of the letter, to anything that and the reliability of anything that came up in this series. Just because someone says something, you know, there are all sorts of kind of legal evidentiary hoops you have to jump through to even get it admitted. Mm-hmm. So I think that first, a judge would have to determine whether this would have even been probative evidence at trial. And then if it goes through, that a judge determines, yes, it may have, it could have been admitted at trial, then they have to go to the next hurdle of, would that actually prove the defendant's actual innocence and have an effect on a jury that way? And I think that's where they would really fail.
And it doesn't prove innocence by any means, but it does prove if they could bring all this out. And there is a lot of people that are now coming out and backing up these claims from Menudo about Jose Menendez. It could prove that these children were the victims of insanely abusive parents for so many years, and they had no other way out of this abuse. No one would have believed them at the time had they raised their hands. Some people even did try raising their hands back then, and it was just shot down because that's simply kind of how society and, well, the music industry works. And one could argue that the children saw, and they were kids, that they had no other way out other than committing such a heinous act on their parents. And yes, obviously it was horrible. We all understand that they did do it. There's not an argument anymore. You know, did they commit the crime? They did. But is there a way where they could look at it and go, this was justified because of the abuse and the mental and physical torture that was being put upon these people to commit the crime? Almost, you know, in the same lines of an abused spouse, that's years and years of abuse. Eventually they have to stand up. They don't know any other way out, even though there may be logical ways out. And they end up, you know, snapping and killing their abuser. Is there a way that it could be looked at that for a lesser sentence? Or would it have to go to a new trial to lessen a sentence in some case like this?
I would think it would have to go to a new trial. I don't practice in California, so I'm just going to say that from my research, I think it looks like it would have to go to a new trial.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm looking back and I'm going to say I'm not as familiar with, you know, all of the intricacies of the 1996 case, but as I remember it, and I do remember seeing it on court TV at the time, and I think Leslie Abramson was the defense attorney, and I remember her incredible success at humanizing these two boys who had just pretty much gunned down their parents, and it looked to be really in cold blood. And I vividly remember her with her arms around them, really making them, really putting forth that defense of them as victims. So I do know that a lot of this came out, maybe not these two particular points of evidence, but this was the defense. You know, so that this isn't like this is kind of newly discovered evidence that they have not put forth a self-defense claim or put forth evidence of abuse from the father. This was put forth at their trial. The jury did consider, you know, everything that was put forth then, and they did have very effective counsel at the time to do all of that.
They did put this forth, but they didn't have any sort of corroborating evidence from other people, from other sources saying that, yes, Jose Menendez was molesting other kids, too. So it was pretty much, do you believe these kids were being molested by their father or not? When you add that extra piece of evidence in that all these other kids, happens to be Menudo of all things, were also being molested. I mean, that part was never considered because it wasn't part of the evidence, because these kids, the Menudo kids, had never spoken out at that moment in time.
Well, then you have to look at, you know, each of the claims from each of those kids. You have to see if those claims are, if those claims are, believable and credible. And then you've also got to then tie that to the Menendez brothers. You know, and tie that to all of, you know, the evidence and context of how they committed this killing. And does the fact, let's say you believe and find credible, and a court finds all that, yes, all of this evidence is really credible. Does it even tie into them? And would it have even been admitted?
Yeah.
You know, would that have even been admitted? Because then you're dealing with, you know, you're dealing with a judge balancing a jury looking at the victim of a crime and deciding, oh, this person deserved to be shot, And what the jury is really having to decide is, were the brothers defending themselves? And a judge is going to have to weigh all of that evidence to see, is it more probative? You know, does it help mm-hmm. you to make that decision than prejudicial, where you're really just attacking the victim of a crime in making a defense? So there's a lot of balancing that's pretty nuanced that a judge would have to do there, even if you get through all the hurdles of finding this evidence credible and admissible.
So your opinion on the end of the day of this one, do you think this will go anywhere, or is this just another, you know, it's a spotlight, it's very interesting for a little bit of time, but likely won't make much of an impact at the end of the day?
I'm going to go with the latter, Tony. Right. That's what I'm picking for today. And I'm going to say that as of now, I'm going to couch it, of course, because I'm an attorney, right?
Yep.
So as of now, it's interesting to look at. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And if I am proven wrong, I'll come back on and we'll talk about it some more.
Excellent.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Laura Gilbertson with Tribeca Blue Consulting, former prosecutor. Thank you so much for your insight into that very interesting case. If you like our podcast, you want access to all of our episodes ad-free and access to all of our podcasts here in the True Crime Today family, all you got to do is sign up to be a premium subscriber through Apple Podcasts. You'll get every single thing right there to binge away on right away when you sign up. Do go and check that out. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.